Hello, everyone. It is Rob Rousseau here. It's the Insurgents Podcast. Welcome. Welcome back. Now, obviously, on this show, we do spend a lot of time talking about what's going on in the United States of America. I know there are big American news stories going on right now with historic electoral victories in New York and the government shutdown, Trump and all this stuff. Yeah. I know there's things happening, but there's something even more important happening right now in Canada, and I think you all need to hear about it. And it involves ostriches. Yes. There's a very serious ostrich situation unfolding here in Canada. And today I have Jesse Hawken and Karen Geyer joining the show to talk to me about it and talk to all of you about it. You're not going to want to miss this. We've covered a lot of important unfolding news stories over the years here on this program, and this is right up there with the most serious stories that we've ever had to discuss. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that. Hey, remember, folks, if you enjoy this program, please support us by subscribing over at insurgentspod.com and get access to all of our really fantastic bonus content that we've done over the weeks and months and years. Get a bonus episode every single week in addition to the free episode that comes out. It helps us out a lot. It helps keep this show on the air. We appreciate it a lot. We've got a really good bonus episode coming up in a couple days that I think people are not going to want to miss. So once again, if you enjoy this show, please subscribe over at insurgentspod.com. That's all the preamble for now. Let's get to Jesse Hawken and Karen Geyer and the extremely serious ostrich situation. Jesse and Karen are going to be joining the show right after this.
Oh, can you hear that? She can't be stupid.
We got a couple mics, a couple people on mic today. Right now we're joined by Karen and Jesse, and as listeners of this show know, sometimes when co-host Jordan is unavailable, I take the opportunity to inform folks about what's going on up here in the fine and very normal country of Canada. Sometimes it's of interest to people. They think it's kind of just like, oh, it's a kind of a fun little... what's happening up there in that crazy place? And, you know, sometimes it's not that important. Sometimes there's not that much like going on. But I think right now is not one of those times. Right now there's a very serious situation unfolding. It's a very serious and grave and unfortunate situation. Mm-hmm. It's scary. A lot of us are looking around and starting to ask some really big questions about what kind of country we're living in.
You know, and... some people have their heads in the sand about this, if you will.
Yeah. Wow. They don't realize, you know, the depth to which this government will sink in order to...
Yeah. So, folks, what we're talking about is we have an ostrich situation developing. This is a developing story here in Canada. And this is just one of those things that like I've been seeing the chatter. I've been seeing the ostrich related chatter. And sometimes things just happen that I'm just like, you know what? I'm not going to look into this too much. It's just too weird. It's too depressing, but it doesn't seem to be going away. Ostrich gate is not going away. It just seems to be expanding. It's taking over the minds and hearts and imaginations of a lot of our right-wing commentariat. Mm-hmm. And it's truly just an amazing situation. So that's why I was glad to have both of you come on to break this down. And Jesse, I was really hoping on you to kind of hold our hands here and let both me and, you know, everyone listening know what the heck's been going on.
Yeah.
What's with the ostriches? What is happening?
What is Bird Ghazi? You may ask.
Well, it ain't going away. I know that.
No,
it's not.
I know that.
Bird Ghazi ain't going away. So unfortunately.
So in a nutshell, last year there was a avian flu problem in North America. There was an outbreak of avian flu at an ostrich farm in BC, Universal Ostrich Farms, which claimed to house 300 birds. What this farm does with the birds, I'm sure we'll get into later, but that's neither here nor there when it comes to the controversy. It was a highly pathogenic influenza outbreak that killed about 70 of their birds. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency, the CFIA, ordered a cull to contain the disease. And the farmers dragged this through the courts for most of the year. In the summertime, RFK Jr. got involved, and he sent a letter to the CFIA asking for the birds to be spared for medical study. Because it's important. We got to understand these flus and how they travel. And also, you know, he's got a big freezer at his place that he could put some of these ostriches in for like a barbecue.
He's just waiting for them to get hit by a car.
Yeah. Waiting for them to be hit by his car.
Yeah.
And also getting involved was Dr. Oz, who offered to relocate the flock of ostriches to Florida. This was an offer that was rejected by the farmers. Also, the incredible New York grocery store magnate, John Katsimidatis. See, you can tell I'm not from New York because I don't know this guy's name. This is the guy who threatened to move all his grocery stores out of New York if Mamdani won the election, which he's now, of course, walking back. Anyway, he also wanted to ask the government to spare the birds, and he was willing to move heaven and earth to make sure the birds didn't get killed. Anyway, last week, the case went to our Supreme Court and was dismissed outright. And that was the final step blocking the government from finally carrying out the culling of these birds. There has been a presence of protesters defending the farmers in BC. And wouldn't you know it, these people are also anti-vaxxers who think the bird flu is a hoax. And they also said that herd immunity among the flock has already conquered the problem. There's no need to kill these birds. They're beautiful birds. I mean, who doesn't love ostriches?
Sure.
They were also flying drones over the farm after it was taken over by the CFIA. They seized control of the property, and they, on Friday, they carried out the culling of these birds. I should also mention that Pierre Poilievre was under a lot of pressure to intervene, since many in his caucus are also anti-vaxxers. But he has so far declined beyond saying the issue has been mismanaged from the beginning. In fact, he hasn't even used the word ostrich when talking about this. Well, he's in a lot of trouble with his own caucus as it is, right? This is, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. The only reason that he seized control of the party in the first place was because of the Freedom Convoy. And many of those people are leading the brigade to save the birds. Anyway, on Friday, the birds were all destroyed by marksmen. They were in a pen with bales of hay around it, and a team of expert marksmen shot the birds from a distance and then went through there and finished off any of the birds that were still alive and put them in dumpsters and carried them off to what is believed to be an incineration facility. The protesters, including quote-unquote independent journalists, including Rebel News, including Ezra Levant, have been embedded with the anti-vaxxer protests. They live streamed the shots as the cull was taking place. There was also a heavy RCMP presence added to the scene to maintain order. So of course the unforgiving fist of government has crushed all these, you know, our freedoms. The only reason that I actually have been following this story is because my hero Joe Warmington over at the Toronto Sun has been all over this story for months.
Sure.
I thought maybe he was even there, but as it turns out, he's just been nonstop tweeting about it and writing columns about it.
One of our greatest dipshits in a landscape that's populated by a lot of weirdos and freaks. This man maybe stands atop the mountain, which is really, it's an impressive feat. You know, it's not something to be sneezed at, achieving that level of dipshit notoriety in this media landscape.
Yeah, and he also accidentally exposes lots of stories. Like there was a a story during the pandemic about this church that was refusing to follow the anti-vax. A story about a church that was refusing to follow safety measures. And of course, this is religious persecution. What do you mean I can't have a service at my church out in the country in Ontario where people have to wear a mask or show that they've been vaccinated? And this woman said, this was just like how I was treated as a child in Germany. And then, of course, it turned out that she had her family connections to the Nazis. Anyway,
many such cases.
Yeah, and I think if I'm remembering this story correctly, that church was like out near like St. Jacobs, Ontario, which is like near where my parents live. And maybe people don't know this who tune in, Rob, but Kitchener-Waterloo used to have a different name. It used to go by Berlin until around 1939. And whereby they changed the name. And that is because it had a high percentage of German people living there.
Well, fortunately, that was the last time we had any immigrant communities that were connected to Nazism coming into this country. We solved that problem.
That's right.
Nipped that in the bud back in the day. And thankfully, we don't have to think about it anymore. We can get into the specifics about this Warmington column and some of the right wing, what has turned into like a real frenzy. Like, this is not just like a niche story. This is like the story in Canadian conservative media right now. And I think it is worth talking about, because as silly as it is, and listen, hey, I don't want to make light of the noble ostrich having to be killed. It's very unfortunate. It's a beautiful creature, you know, but I think it this story does say a lot about a number of different issues that we're dealing with, not just in Canada, but around the Western world right now, with like right-wing disinformation, public health, reactionary public health attitudes, conspiracy. And it's been really wild to watch it all kind of unfold, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think any of us on the call would want to pick up a gun and have to shoot all those birds. So let's get that out of the way. Like, animals dying fucking sucks. I'm holding an animal right now. I'm hoping and praying I will never have to make a decision that somebody else will have to give him a shot to end his life. However, we have seemed to have lost the plot about public health. And there's no such thing as herd immunity when you're talking about RNA viruses, because the whole reason you get a flu shot every year is because RNA viruses, when they replicate, it's not an equal copy of the last thing. It changes, right? So you cannot get ahead of it. That's why we have to get different COVID shots every year. That's why there's Omicron and there's this and there's that and there's all these variants, right? So you can't be like, oh, well, there's enough of these animals have gotten diseased and now it's okay because they're all immune to it. It doesn't work that way, right? So there's a fundamental misunderstanding of the science here. Big shocker. but just the reaction to it. Like, this is how you know somebody is funding this to make this into a big story, because A, the rebel is involved, B, how obscenely huge this story has gotten and how like apoplectic people are. They have more heart for these fucking ostriches than they do for a single child that lives in Brampton. Right?
Yeah. So, to say nothing of like Gaza, where there's actual genocides being sponsored by our government right now of human beings, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, totally. Yes, exactly.
And the cynicism of invoking real world atrocities like the Holocaust in terms of defending these animals with an overall argument that why do we even need food safety inspectors? I've never gotten sick eating food before. You know, like that the food safety inspection process is in itself an evil plot to, make us all docile or whatever it is. But I mean, let's be real. This ostrich farm, the word farm with animals on a farm suggests that they are being used for things like meat.
Yes.
You know, like this isn't the zoo.
Yeah.
It's not like they just went and shot all these animals in the zoo. These ostriches are being bred for meat.
This is what I'm really wondering, like with these folks that are literally talking about ostriches as if there's like, this is what the government wants to do to you. It's like, okay, I don't know where that's coming from. It's like it's activating all of this stuff that's been, you know, really brought out since the pandemic. Again, these fears about public health, this fears about like authoritarian communist governments working with the WEF and wanting to, you know, cull the human population. It's activating all these latent fears. But yeah, that's like, to your point, Jesse, I'm just wondering, like, do these people realize that millions of animals are killed every single day? And that it's in fact like a central plank of our entire Western civilization. And a big thing about that, our culture is completely dependent on that. If we were trying to change that system, these very people would be the first people to lose their fucking minds over it. If we said eat a single less burger per week or cut down on your meat intake to help the environment, all of these people would be rioting in the streets. Our culture, like it's our whole society is built on a constant stream of animals being killed every single day, by the millions, in often really deplorable, horrifying conditions. Totally okay with these people. But these a few hundred ostriches being gunned down by the Stalin-run CFIA is just really activating something primal in these people. And I find it very fascinating.
Yeah. These are the same people who dined out a lot on, oh, look at those wet markets they have in China. They're fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, and these are also the people that I'm telling you right now, if an ostrich hoved onto their property somewhere, they would shoot it and be like, I don't care. Like, that's my right to do that. That's my right to, like, don't, your animal was in the wrong place. Like, they would not think twice about that. These are, like, it's just that this is a very convenient thing to be like, oh my gosh, the poor ostriches, which, by the way, ostriches are like some of the meanest fucking birds of all time. They do not give a shit about you or your family, and they certainly don't give a shit about Peter Polyev. Yeah.
They would kill each and every one of us if it came down to it.
Now, Karen, you were saying as we were joking around getting ready for this show that ostrich meat also has some kind of MLM factor in it. Like,
yeah, so
this is an interesting angle.
Yeah, so don't quote me on this. Don't sue me for this one. But years ago when I was interviewing people who survived MLMs, I spoke to these two gals who run a podcast all about MLMs. And they were telling me about the different kinds of ones that they have out there. And like, there are ones that everybody here is familiar with, like your Avons and all that kind of stuff and your Tupperware and whatever. But they were mentioning that there's these other ones. And one of the ones that was, you know, popping up in the South and popping up in areas where like Mormons live in a more rural environment, for instance, because Mormons are like ripe for these things, was like these, livestock based MLMs. And I believe the ostrich meat was one of them, because they were like, you just pay like this much for the eggs, you get this much yield off the eggs, and then you can sell the meat at this kind of a profit. And it was just one of these things. And of course, like, people are not making the money off of the ostriches or the ostrich meat. They're making money off of selling people the ostrich kit to start their farm, right? And because it's something where if there's so much user error, you can just be like, that's not our fault, that's your fault, you don't know what you're doing, like, we gave you all the tools to do this, bye. And it would not surprise me, when we're talking about the convoy type folks, that somebody has fallen for this as a get rich quick scheme. And so that is part of the reason why they are mad that they were forced to cull.
Yeah, I mean, this just really speaks to how completely melted people's brains have become, and how totally fucked we are if, God forbid, we do have to experience another pandemic. Perhaps that's even worse, more worse or more serious than the COVID one. People are just not going to people have completely positioned themselves against any kind of public health. Like when I just as someone that does not know about these kinds of like important medical issues and like the biology of it and how these disease transmission work, if someone that's like an expert in these things says, hey, unfortunately, we need to do this, even if there's a small chance that it might lead to some kind of outbreak, it's like, yeah, I'm going to just trust the experts here that they're making the right decision. And these people now have been so twisted up by the medical misinformation and this like absolutely loony anti-vax kind of ideology that like there's this deep mistrust of any of these actual experts that are that have spent their lives studying these things. And now people think they know better than these like experts because they follow some fucking weirdo quack on Facebook who tells them that actually the bird flu is good and it builds your immune system to contract it. It's really a troubling sign for what's going to happen the next time we deal with one of these issues, which is going to happen.
It's such a testament to a little knowledge is dangerous, because when you have a little knowledge about media literacy, for instance, you're told, well, who you're supposed to always ask who benefits from this, who profits from this. But that requires a little bit more rigor or interrogation than looking it up on like whyvaccinesarebad.com. Like you have, it can't just be somebody telling you, oh, well, vaccine companies make a lot of money. First of all, it takes a lot of upfront capital to get any vaccines even into testing. So it costs a lot of money and they may not have one that is viable or one that can inoculate enough people to make it worth their while. So there is a lot of cost to it. They are hamstrung also by the profit that they can make, because they often have to make deals with government entities on the pricing of it. So they can't be like, well, it's going to cost $2,000 per shot, because the government would be like, we cannot pay you $2,000 a shot. This is what it has to be. But because they sell in bulk, they will work with, you know, a maximum price on those kinds of things. But do you know who actually made the most profit outside of like, if you look at vaccine companies or whatever, outside of vaccine companies, the people who made the most money off of the COVID pandemic were the supplement industry. Supplement industry is worth five times what the drug industry is. Five times. And they don't have to do any testing. They don't have to submit a single sample of anything that they do to any kind of inspection agency to say this is exactly what's inside the product, what it says on the bottle, or this is how much it is, you know, or this is actually like what it's supposed to do on the bottle. They don't have to do any of that shit. And, you know, also chiropractors, functional medicine doctors, a bunch of these people that are not doctors, never have to go to medical school. You know, another one that people talk about, dietitians are people who have to have a license and they have to, you know, keep up with their education. They have to have a degree. They have to have certain credentials and they are licensed and bonded and they are registered with the government. Nutritionists, that can be anybody. That can be like your mom who's like, don't eat peanut butter because it'll give you syphilis. Okay, great. You're a dietitian or you're a nutritionist. Yeah. Have a great day. Like you literally don't have to have any credentials. You can go to like the some ladies, like, you know, basement school of nutritionology and be like, I'm a nutritionist, and then go on TikTok and sell everybody your product. And that's the problem, is that people, because they're scared, they've gone to all of these other secondary sources and, you know, it's fucked up. Those are the people who made the profit. So interrogating it by saying who makes the money and then going, well, vaccine companies, that's not the whole story, right? Lots of people made money off of telling you the exact wrong thing.
Sure. And a lot of the, I mean, to go back to that, I mean, a lot of the controversy about that, like these vaccines were subsidized and were being given out for free, which is actually like good for public health. And the evil part was how they were being hoarded in these Western countries and not opened up, the IP not being opened up to countries around the world. That was the 100%. Evil. That's the evil big pharma part of that. But they didn't want to talk about it. Jesse, you've been doing a lot of research on this. Do you want to talk about, you mentioned Warmington. I know you've been itching to talk about a friend of the show, Joe Warmington and his crusade on this. Do you want to talk about what he's been seeing and what some of the right-wing commentariat in Canada have been saying about this unfolding situation?
With pleasure. Again, looping back to what I said before, when Joe Warmington gets upset about something, I'm all ears because I cannot wait to hear how he misunderstands things and the role that he plays in spreading misinformation. I don't know how dumb he really is, whether these things are actually shockers to him or whether he's that cynical. But I want to read you this fantastic article that he wrote on October 17th, because he got really mad when the CBC on This Hour Has 22 Minutes did a sketch about the ostrich farmers. So this article is great. RCMP probes dwindling ostrich numbers as CBC laughs at impending deaths. He means impending deaths of the ostriches. No matter how loudly the CBC's This Hour Has 22 Minutes laughs and jokes about the culling of living animals, there's nothing funny about dead ostriches. Nor is the mocking of the Canadian farmers, who in real life are advocating for them to not be killed, but in a mocking way, comedian Mark Critch depicts them in wardrobe and narrative as dumb hicks who are the subject of he and the CBC elite's disdain and ridicule. Maybe some find the gallows humor at the bird's expense to be a punchline, but not everybody does. Some have come from around North America to fight for these birds, who are not right-wing or left-wing, but living things.
Come on, man.
Now he gets really mad. The CBC and the liberal bullies that fund and run the network, as well as the country, have used this unfunny comedy show. I will agree with Joe on that.
Sometimes he gets it right.
They have used this unfunny comedy show before to soften up the audience to the narrative that lib-left purveyors of authoritarian government control and regulation are good, while Orwellian dystopian death cult behavior is normal. That crowd in all the key control positions push abortion, gender fluidity, forced mass experimental inoculations, and euthanasia programs like medical assistance in dying, but hate Freedom Convoy truckers and opposition leader Pierre Poilievre, who they routinely lampoon as a buffoon while lionizing Prime Minister Mark Carney as a strategic thinking tough guy who stands up to President Trump in the Oval Office, which he hasn't done in real life. But who knew that their hate extended to big birds? Now we know.
Okay, gender fluidity. Just randomly in there. Like, what's, first of all, isn't that freedom, number one? Number two, how is gender fluidity a dystopian nightmare of like, I'm sorry.
It's just like checking off the bingo of like of right wing fake controversies because, and like things that they've established that terrify them, and they don't totally know or understand why that is. Just like, let's check off the whole list.
There's a possibility he could strike out twice with the same person because of gender fluidity.
Yeah, he made it worse this morning because he's still really angry about it. And he said it was also similar to the residential schools controversy. Why couldn't we have just worked out a common sense solution without bringing in the heavy hand of the state?
And I want to mention, too, when you say that Warmington says, oh, it's just like the residential schools controversy, you might think, if you're like a normal person, oh, even though this would be an insane thing to say, oh, he's comparing these ostriches to the way that we treated indigenous peoples, which is already completely fucking insane. But no, that's not actually what he's saying, to be clear. What he's saying is that the residential school controversy, in quotes, was a fake hoax, which is now just taken full hold in like a lot of our kind of centrist and right-wing media, that all of those conversations about unmarked graves and residential schools is just this pretend fake thing for which there is never any evidence. They've all agreed that this is all just a big hoax that was perpetrated by the extreme left liberal government and their allies in these social movements. So that's what he's comparing it to. And like, I just want to reiterate how fucking outrageous it is that someone like Joe Warmington, literally he downplays the historically documented genocidal treatment of indigenous peoples in this country by our government, and downplays that, downplays this long legacy, which has been well documented and well researched, of abuse and torture and death and kidnappings and cultural erasure that's happened in this residential school system. He downplays that, and he's literally placing the lives of a few hundred ostriches above the actual human beings that we know historically were treated in this way by the government, and suggesting that, like, conservative men basically are more of a victim somehow because of the ostrich situation, because that's indicative of how the government, what they actually want to do to a conservative, white conservative newspaper columnist. Is that about right, do you think?
I would say. I mean,
No, that's really good stuff.
And an extra level of cynicism, because certain supposed genocides are what I want to talk about, but actual genocides are something I don't want to talk about.
Yeah. In fact, I support that. In fact, I use my platform to downplay and denounce anyone that speaks out against the actual genocide, again, of human beings, including children, which has been well documented that my own government, who I accuse of being far left radical communists, fully supported. That's okay to Joe Wormington. Not only is it okay, like, he actually thinks it's good and he supports it, but once again, ostriches, that is a human rights issue number one for folks like Joe Wormington, and he's not an outlier. This is like a really now common sentiment that I'm seeing in our media and in, like, you know, online discourse. It's pretty troubling, gang. I don't know. I don't think it's very good that this is happening.
I think it really comes down to, like, two things. It comes down to, one, this whole idea of property. That was what it was always about during COVID as well. You know, I am a small business owner. We heard, how many times did we hear about the fucking small business owners? That's the reason why they shifted the focus to truckers, because it sounded like these guys are just these, like, you know, salt of the earth working class guys. It wasn't that these were people who owned car dealerships and were landlords and, you know, they were.
I'm a trucker and that I have, like, a Ford F-150 and I live in a gated community and have a successful landscaping business that I run out of the suburbs.
Yeah. You know, or whatever. Like, I'm not saying that nobody in that movement is working class, but I think that the definition of working class for a lot of these people is totally different from what our working definition of working class is. But also, you know, it was about ownership with that. Like, oh, I can't do my thing. I can't have my business, whatever. All of these things were about that. You know, when you look at, you know, all of this gender stuff, it's also about ownership. Like, I cannot put people into boxes. I cannot discriminate against somebody because I don't know what gender they are. I can't do these things because I don't have a control system built around this thing. It's also, when you're talking about, you know, this human rights issue of the ostriches, it's about the human rights to own these animals. It's not about whether the animals should live or die. It's about, like, how dare you take my livelihood away from me? Like, I'm sorry, but you raising 300 ostriches does not a livelihood make, first of all. But it's the whole thing is about ownership, and that's why, you know, they get mad about stuff like the residential schools, because they do believe that by might, we had the right to, you know, intern these people and take their children away from them and beat the native out of them. And if they died because of starvation or abuse or what have you, that it was okay to just bury them wherever, because they weren't actually humans. They were possessions. We had control over them. So we owned them. So what?
Yeah, with and hiding behind religion as well, which is also happening here with the protesters. I mean, it's a very, you know, they're doing to the ostriches what they did to Jesus Christ. And you know who I mean when I say they, you know, kind of, there's a vibe of that going on with these protest movements. Now, I want to, my pal on Blue Sky, Junior Honcho, directed me to the Save the Ostriches Facebook group, which was a whole other level of insanity.
Jesse, this like bit my brain. When
so he told me there are 10.
We're through the looking glass here, people. Yeah. We don't know how deep this goes.
I have to go on TikTok for my job on a regular basis, and this still fucked me up.
Yeah. So he told me there are 10 months of lunatic news reports on YouTube about this. One guy was absolutely certain that they had been secretly liquefying ostriches in a huge blender and hauling them away in a suck truck for porta potties.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Like,
honey, the suck truck is here. No, it's not as fun as it sounds.
Your ride's here, Karen. It's the suck truck. So I want to read to you some in just unhinged comments. They're taking this really, really hard. I mean, the killing has begun, right? They for the last two or three weeks, all the photos were of like ostriches happy, shitty AI drawings of ostriches with tears in their eyes and saying, please save us. An incredible generated by AI poster comparing the Toronto Blue Jays to the ostriches. Like, we've got to stand together, birds together strong. Just out of control. Every single incredibly sentimental. Like, ostriches are such beautiful creatures. What could they, you know, how could they do this to the birds? Like, they're killing elephants or they're killing giraffes. So get a load of this.
Because Mark Carney is just he's cackling on his throat, going, ha, 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 ha.
A lot of the
we're just doing this because I think it's fun and cool to torture these conservatives by showing that we can bring our iron fist down and do ostrich genocide to them at any point. Mm-hmm. That's what they think is happening.
A lot of the comments call him WEF Carney.
Okay.
Right. I mean, this is the World Economic Forum behind
this. Yeah.
So I want to read you this run-on sentence that really explains what's motivating these people. Accidental reveals of shit. This guy, rando guy, wrote, "It is plain to see in this situation that the government and CFIA are bowing to big ag, big business, and big pharma. Because through their donations, they are helped to stay in power. There has been a lot going on behind the scenes, collusion and pressure, more than we could even imagine. And the silence from the top political leaders speaks volumes. None of them want to bite the hand that keeps them in power, or in opposition for that matter. Ever since the COVID debacle and ridiculous restrictions to the trucker convoy and the tramping of the right to peacefully protest government stupidity, overreach, the persecution of Chris Barber and Tamara Litch under the guise of prosecution, shows how misguided and off the rail the libtards have become. Wake up, Canada." This is all big pharma, you know.
So I don't think anybody on this call voted liberal. I don't know that for a fact, but I don't think any of us did. So it's not like we have a dog in this fight.
I did not.
But like the idea, look, I fully support these guys on one thing and one thing only. Yeah, let's get corporate donations out of our electoral system, 100%. But that means everybody. That means no landlords. That means nobody who owns a car dealership. Nobody who, is from an Italian family north of Toronto that wants to have a specific highway put in. Mm-hmm. All of those donations have to go.
but the thing that none of these people are mentioning in all this overly emotional and lachrymose concerns about the ostriches is the involvement of the Canadian food. Food is the word here. The other thing is, the reason why the CFIA got involved is because the ostriches are being harvested to be killed in the first place. Right. These people are turning it into an emotional, how could you shoot a poor defenseless ostrich? This is that thing that you see a lot with conservatives where they turn into, I'm just a widow guy, when they flout restrictions. Like, the Food Inspection Agency moved in because there was a fucking flu influenza raging through this farm that killed dozens of their ostriches. And they tried to cover it up, the farmers, like they put up roadblocks in every way. The only reason it came to this level where they're just finally like seizing the farm and shooting all the birds is because the farmers fought them every step of the way.
Yeah, again, just like I think it's really kind of unfortunate and a bit scary the way that like this complete collapse in confidence in public health experts to make decisions that benefit people. Again, like I'm able to fully admit that I don't understand these things as well as people that have gone to school to study these, to study infectious disease and biology and these important factors. And when these people make a choice to keep people safe, you just have to like put your trust in them. Like I have people in my Twitter mentions right now being like, oh, how many shots did the government con you into getting? And it's like, fuck, like I took shots when I was a little kid so I could go to school. Because we have a thing called vaccines, which have been a medical miracle, which have eliminated all these really dangerous diseases over the years. And thank goodness, my parents, when the doctors that made these decisions that said, okay, you've got to get X and Y vaccines in order to go to school, they said, yep, of course. And I'm glad that they did. Mm-hmm. That's like something that we just accepted was part of our society for a long time. And it was actually a really positive and important medical development that had been made and just been completely lost now. And like now, it's not just about the COVID shot. It's not just about this. It's like all medical science, no experts are being trusted about anything. Mm. Again, it just really like makes me quite anxious to think about the next time the next time we're faced with something serious like that, the complete lack of ability we have to confront it. Like Jesse, I was just, we don't need to get into the spoilers of the ending because I haven't seen the whole thing yet, but I did finally start watching Eddington the other day. And I actually had to turn it off because I was like, this is too upsetting for me to watch. Just this depiction of that specific moment of like May 2020 and everyone on their phones and everyone being driven completely insane. Fortunately, it didn't happen to me, of course, or either of you because we're built different. But it's just, it really was like actually distressing to me to see this being depicted because we're still just living through the fallout of that moment. And there doesn't seem to be any sign. And then when you have like AI and the rise of like this kind of user generated, like AI generated video, it's going to collapse even more our ability to distinguish between reality and fiction. It's really, you know, we can laugh and joke around about this ostrich situation because it is quite funny, but it also is, I think, really alarming and is really highlighting some really serious fissures that have developed over the last few years in our culture and society. And there's I don't really see a way out of it.
Now, I think this is sort of hitting on a kernel too. Like, there is a lot of evidence. There have been scientific studies into this about, like, you know, the difference between somebody being conservative and not conservative sometimes is not that they had trauma. It is how they responded to it or the resources that were available to them to cope with it. And something that I always try to point out to people when we do have to talk about COVID and that COVID era is, you know, and I will give a story about this after, but, you know, it went on for a good like 4 years of like, you know, a lot of uncertainty, and it was a mass traumatizing event that we did not start talking about openly until last year. Like, we were talking about this and that and whatever, these little things that came up, but you will now go out for dinner with people and they'll be like, do you remember when we had to do this? Or I remember that time when this happened or whatever. And they will tell a personal story about something that happened during COVID. And it wasn't until recently that people were actually able to sit down and digest that and actually move through it. And I will sometimes tell people stories about how I traveled a lot for work during that time period. And like one time I was set to fly to Miami, and I got on the phone with HR and somebody from legal, and they were like, listen, are you aware that you can decline going on this trip? And I was like, yes. And they were like, okay, are you aware of the protocols that are in place that you have to adhere to while you're there? Yes. Are you aware of the testing that is required to go there and blah, 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 blah? Yes. Are you aware that if you fail a test that you have to put yourself up in a hotel room that we will pay for, you have to stay there for a week in quarantine? Yeah. Like, it was, and I will tell people about that and they're like, if somebody said that to me, I would freak the fuck out. And at the time I was just like, whatever, I know I've got, whatever, it's fine. I'll go.
And we went through these situations that were so fucking absurd, and we just had to come up with the best solution based on the two options that we had in front of us and just move forward in the moment. And that is a warlike mentality. And a lot of people, that broke their fucking brains, because these are people who were used to having ownership and control over every single aspect of their life. They also had built a life where they were not expected to think about other people. And that really broke a lot of people's brains, because that has helped fuel this whole, like, you know, every time I see anything on TikTok where they talk about Brampton, for instance, or they talk about downtown Toronto, people will be like, look at the people in that picture. It doesn't even look like Canada, because there'll be like two brown people in the photo. Yeah. You're like, get over yourself.
Yeah, that's a very popular form of right-wing Twitter content now. Look, brown people in a mall.
Yeah.
Canada has fallen.
I can't really believe it. Ugly. They need jeans? Why?
Yeah. 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 Sorry, Jesse, you had something.
I'm sorry, Jeff.
Do you want to get back to that?
Just a little apocryphal story. When my kid was born in 2015, we, you know, you get the shots, right? You get the rubella and the diptet shots. And the staff at the hospital were explaining it to us almost as if they were dismantling an atomic bomb. Like, we might get mad at the very idea of taking vaccinations into a child because of all the stuff that was already up in the air about how vaccines cause autism and all that jazz. I didn't understand why they were being so cautious in suggesting the idea of the kid being vaccinated, because we were like, yeah, of course, vaccinate the kid. But when the pandemic happened and all the vaccine paranoia started and all these people were freaking out about what's really in the vaccines and stuff, I realized that before the pandemic even hit, there was probably many situations in hospitals and in medical offices of people losing their shit at the very idea of being vaccinated, which I don't give a shit about. I think what I hate about the anti-vaxxer crowds is that they depend on all of the vaccinated people to have been vaccinated so that they can seem like mavericks or something, right? I mean, if we all took their advice and none of us got vaccinated, there'd be so many deaths and so much shorter lifespans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I remember the anti-vax stuff, like, and it's reading about it in kind of, you know, maybe 10, 12 years ago, and thinking about it more of kind of like a woo-woo, you know, like wellness yoga types out in California, like, oh, this is kind of a wacky kind of like the Jenny McCarthy element and that kind of a thing. Like, this is kind of like a wacky subculture that's developing. The idea, you know, if I had to go back and tell myself though in those years, the way that this was going to be completely a mainstream idea, this anti-vax stuff would be so shocking. It really felt like this really kind of weird niche thing, like, well, thank goodness that we don't have to deal with any of that kind of stuff. And the way that now you have like Joe Rogan on like the biggest podcast in America, you know, talking about this, having this insane thing going, like, look at Canada, look at the population of Canada after they introduced the vax and it drops. And it's like, there was a pandemic.
Yeah.
Like, many people died famously.
Yeah.
Like, it's so strange how they've completely memory hold the idea that people were being intubated, like hospital emergency wards were filled up, hundreds of thousands of people were dying, and they've completely just like turned this into, no, that either didn't happen or it's because of the vax, or twisting themselves into this like mental pretzel to justify this like fucking wacky anti-science, anti-medical ideology that they've made their entire personality.
Yeah. Well, Rob, you and I are friends with a woman named Nora who wrote a book about that, and wrote a book about how a lot of those deaths were directly tied back to healthcare facilities that were for elderly people and like elderly care facilities, because of the way that they were being mismanaged. We had 10 conservative premiers at the time, and they were being mismanaged by the government, and they were being underfunded. And you know, the for-profit ones were actually doing worse than the ones that were run by the government. And the whole reason that we have for-profit ones is because of conservative governments. But, you know, nobody ever wants to talk about that. But that's why people died, because whenever you have a airborne virus and you have a bunch of people who are immune compromised on a bunch of medication, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all living in a similar environment and having the same nurses and care workers taking care of them, that's how that happens. It's not rocket science.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The whole thing is like, again, it's a kind of funny story to talk about, but it is really highlighting some really kind of dark trends in both Canada and the United States and the Western world.
I know we're running out of time, but can I read you a couple more of the ones that made me LOL when I was looking at the Facebook group? Here's one. I'd honestly be checking into whether or not these people were into satanic or some kind of cult to find out if this was a sacrifice. There was a full moon on the 5th and 6th.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it could have been Satan that had these birds killed. Mm-hmm. Someone else wrote, and this person, I wanted to reach into my computer and slap them in the face. My grandmother was in a camp. I always wondered how that all went down. Now I'm watching it in real time.
Yeah, that's how it went down. How do we know that ostriches were Christian in the first example? How do we?
Yeah. I have someone maybe right now accepted, and my mentions right.
You know, maybe they, you know, accepted the light of Islam into their life before they were killed.
Yeah, the ostriches unquestioningly repeated the Shahada before.
That's right.
Before the
we don't know. That's true. I wasn't there.
You don't know if that happened. No. So I have someone right now. Like this just popped up right now, saying. They have like an image of all the ostrich corpses, and say Big Pharma wanted them out of the way because they had immunity from the fictitious avian. So they had immunity from the fictitious flu. It doesn't exist, but they have immunity from it.
Yeah, a photo
the
of
drug
an
pushers want to make money out of. So the government ordered this mass slaughter. Sure. Can you imagine the distress? And it's like Sandra, and she's got an Israeli flag, by the way, in her bio that I'm seeing. And like Sandra, I've seen, do you know how the images that I've seen, the horrifying things that I've seen on my Twitter timeline over the last 2 years, like you'll excuse me if I'm maybe not so moved by this image of very unfortunately killed dead ostriches. Again, a noble bird, a noble creature, very sad to see, but like, I'm not you know, as quite as horrified by this image of ostriches. And again, this is someone that you can tell just looking at her Twitter profile. Literally supports this being done to actual human children. That's like not only acceptable to her, but good. Mm-hmm. Something that's good that should be encouraged. I guess one final thing that this is making me think of, sorry, Karen, I'll let you get to your point in just one sec, but oftentimes when I'm seeing all this stuff on Twitter and I just start despairing, going like, what is wrong with people? What's going on? I guess that's one other thing that I've started to think of is like, a lot of these people probably are not real. You know what I mean? Like that's a whole other part of our modern, like post-Eddington data center future where it's just like, not only are human beings being driven insane, but a lot of these accounts on social media, it's not even that they're, you know, some kind of like someone in a warehouse somewhere in UAE or Israel or Russia or wherever. They're literally not human beings. They're robots, they're AI, they're program. I think that's in a whole other thing. Like, how many of the people that are freaking out about this not only are like literally not human beings? That's probably something we should examine as well.
Yeah.
Or they're just talking. They're all talking, no action. They're not going to do fucking jack shit, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're behind their keyboards fantasizing about what's really going on and not dealing with anything else that's going on in their lives.
In a different before internet world, these people would have just been saying that shit to a bunch of disinterested folks at a bar and it would have never gotten any further. But you know, you see
some crank newsletter and like distributing it from their van that like a couple dozen people maybe take a look at and go, oh wow, that's some wacky stuff, and they move on with their lives.
You see this stuff though and you're like, or you watch Alien Earth and you're like, who the fuck is letting this ill person back on a fucking ship? But these are the people who would have done that. These are 100% the people.
Yeah. We don't need to follow the quarantine routine. Yeah. We don't need to follow that. This is important.
Yeah.
If
the shape-shifting alien came on board as an ostrich, then they'd be like, oh, how cute.
Yeah, welcome in. It's so sad. It's like the thing, the Norwegians are pursuing the ostrich. They're like, stop harassing this bird. Come on.
And that's one more. And one more amazing Facebook comment. What's next? Our dogs, cats, us?
Come on.
First,
come
they on, killed man. All the ostriches, and I said nothing because I was not an ostrich.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like, these are people that quite literally support the you know, mass murder of human beings. And and as I pointed out earlier, live in a society and would be the first people to lose their minds if the government ever did anything to even slightly slow down the constant flow of murdered animals that powers our entire, like, food chain, our food supply system. Like, these people would absolutely lose their goddamn minds if there was even a suggestion that the government would say, like, hey, maybe you should eat less meat. Maybe you should eat less burgers, less steak.
Or they'd be less upset if food wasn't being inspected by a safety agency and was just going out with botulism in it.
These are
or with avian flu in it.
They're the ones that are always like, oh, well, we should just, like, you know, lay waste to Hastings in Vancouver because all those people are a waste of society and whatever, and like they're just drug kill addicts them. Or whatever. Yep. These are the same people who, when Toronto police shot and killed a teenager who was disturbed on a TTC streetcar years ago, who he had a knife on him, but he was not a threat to anyone, and he was just disturbed in the moment. And even if he did intend to hurt somebody, it's not an excuse for police to shoot somebody at point blank range and put them down. These are the people who are like, well, he shouldn't have done that. He should have been obeying the law. So I don't feel bad about it. So you should be obeying the law by getting your animals inspected. Because people have to eat that meat, supposedly.
Yeah. Anyway, it just seems like this is all kind of part of a broader political trend that I think we're seeing throughout the Western world right now, where these, like, center left parties are shutting down the left flank, moving towards the center, like we're seeing with Carney and his budget that he just produced. Like, he's trying to get conservatives to, like, cross the floor and join his party so he can have a majority and avoid an election, passing a very conservative agenda. Cutting public sector workers and giving more money to the military and border and that kind of stuff. There's a whole conversation about the budget. But this is happening all over. Like, you have these center-left parties moving towards the center, and then you have the parties on the right just going off into this, like, complete wacko zone. And this is what we're end up being left with. These are the options that we're left with. Yeah. Like, we're seeing the same thing in the UK with the Labour Party, who have just opened the door for Nigel Farage and Reform to potentially form the next government, which a couple years ago I think would have been unthinkable. We're seeing Trumpism in the United States as a result of, like, the kind of centrism of the Democratic Party. It just seems to be, like, this trend that we're seeing, and there seems to be no real limit to how completely wacky the conservative movement is going to continue getting as this process continues. And the ostrich situation, I think, is a prime example of that.
Yeah. No, it is. I mean, people pick these moments to appeal to emotion because it's the easiest thing to do, because even if you try to appeal to somebody with their wallet and say, well, this isn't working out for you, there's still this, like, weird reflexive thing that sometimes happens. But when you talk about, like, oh, poor animals being injured or killed or whatever, it's almost universally one of those things that can get people right in the throat, and they'll get behind your cause. Even more so than children. There's, like, again, like, I work in advertising, like, there's actual research done on this, and it's, like, 100% true. It's why you see talking animals in a bunch of commercials. It's why, you know, because that stuff works. Whereas, like, sympathizing with a child, like, it's literally like that Twitter, you know, what if the child was just unpleasant? You don't know. Like, yeah. So, you know. you know, so it really does. There is a psychological thing behind this. And that's why to the people on this call, we see this as so nakedly something that somebody's obviously funding this to make this push further than the usual cranks that it would have stayed with. Right. And that's why it's so infuriating, because there is nothing like that that is on the left. And to your point earlier, like, the media, loves to look at the right-wing folks and talk about, well, they're just entitled to their opinion, but left-wing people are always, like, they're always extremist. Like, Zoran Mamdani saying that the government should own grocery stores was an extremist opinion.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, and, what?
and they're all bark and no bite. Like, somebody like Mamdani is a terrible threat, and then he gets a million votes, and a majority of the voters voted for him. And now that's obviously it didn't work. And a lot of the people that were saying, I'm moving out of New York if he wins, I'm closing all my grocery stores, are like, don't bother me. Just leave me alone. That was just, that was bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Of course, it always is. There's so many documented cases of that over the years, but people still fall for it.
Yeah. Or, and that's a case also of, like, you have, like, American conservatives being like, oh, this guy's going to be the face of the Democrats now. This guy who's like, hey, let's take a few concrete actions to make life slightly more miserable. We all agree that, like, it's becoming less and less sustainable to, like, have to, for the rent prices and food prices. We all agree that this is a problem.
Yeah.
So let's take these steps to address that. And they're like, whoa, check out this wacko over here. And then meanwhile, the president is this fucking psycho game show host that are like sending masked, untrained Gestapo into American cities and kidnapping elementary school teachers or daycare workers or guys at the Home Depot parking lot. And they're like, oh, this is actually okay. It's okay that he's the head of our movement. But this wacky extremist is going to be this albatross around their necks. It's pretty insane.
It's the extremist opinion that you shouldn't sit in Rikers Island for decades because you couldn't afford to pay bail because of being arrested for defaulting on your rent. That's extremist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, this is a whole separate discussion. Like, I thought maybe we could get into this stuff, but we riffed about ostriches for too long. I think one thing, though, that just to briefly comment on it is that the reason that I think a lot of people around the world in Canada and elsewhere were really focused on that campaign is because it does kind of provide possibly a sort of roadmap for how a progressive campaign like that could work elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I think Toronto would be a great example for a city where someone could run that kind of style of campaign. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I understand why, when everything is so grim and bleak, even with all the caveats and the cynicism, which I somewhat understand how difficult it's going to be and how cynical people are about going into these, you know, reforming these big parties and the ability of making these big sweeping changes through electoralism, completely understand the cynicism about that. But at the same time, with how relentlessly grim everything is, it's nice to see people feel a little bit of hope for just like a couple of hours. You know, that was nice. And I know people worked really, really hard to make that outcome happen. Mm-hmm. And it was inspiring, and it was cool. And it's something that I think if you have any kind of progressive values, it's showing a way forward and a way that, like, you can actually speak to some of the really big concerns and crises that we're facing and hopefully make some kind of an impact using this kind of a system. So that's I think why a lot of people were interested in that.
I mean, it was like, for one evening out. Only, it's okay to live out.
Yeah.
He didn't just speak by. Like, there was something that he had 86% of the vote. Like, when was the last time anybody had 86% of the vote? Never.
Yeah, I think no matter how cynical you are about it, it was a really historic achievement, you know? And while I get why people would be kind of cynical about that, it's also, there's so many things that are oppressively grim and depressing right now. So it was nice when you feel like there's the possibility of things maybe getting better. It's a nice change from the constant feeling of dread we have as we look towards the future.
Things getting better, and also somebody up against it too.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we'll see what it goes. You know, who knows what can happen. But, you know, that's, it was very exciting to see. Jesse, I know you got to go. Thank you so much to the two of you for coming on to talk about the situation. Again, it's funny and weird, but it also is, I think, actually important to think about and talk about because it's indicative of some really ugly kind of trends that we're experiencing here in the Western world right now. So I hope if you're not in Canada, you're not familiar with this ostrich situation, now you're informed and you're aware about this very serious ongoing political event. Karen and Jesse, thank you very much for joining the show.
Thank you for having us. Come with us to Costco.
We're Costco guys now. Do you just want to let everyone know where they can find you online if you want to plug any of your work or anything that you got going on?
Come on over to Blue Sky. That's where I am most of the time. I still have a Twitter account, but I don't use it very much anymore. Why bother? But I'm under my name at Blue Sky, and my podcast Junk Filter is turning 5 this week.
Hey.
And more shows on the way.
I don't have anything to promote, but I am also on Blue Sky. You can just look me up by my name. I'll be on there. And if you see an Animal Crossing avatar with a beard, that's me.
Great. Thank you to you both.